Hello, and welcome to the Movie Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a movie that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the movie Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time from 2010. Now, I had known about the video game way back when it was out. I don't know if I ever played it or not.
I never played it.
I was never a huge video game player. I'd played some other stuff from the company that had done it, but I don't think I'd played that one. And when it came out as a movie, I was curious about it. So it's been on the list to watch. But obviously it's taken, you know, a decade and a half to get around to it.
I remember when it came out, seeing the commercials and liking the visuals.
Yeah, well, and I think that really is a testament not only to the way they marketed it, but to the film. Because, man, some of the visuals were just amazing in terms of the all-encompassing vista of the desert or the city or some of the kind of the parkour scenes when they're, you know, going around the rooftops of the city and whatnot.
Well, and it holds up.
It does. It does. There were a number of places where I was wondering what would it look like if they had shot it today. Not in a, they did it poorly. They did it amazingly. And there was nothing where it's like, oh, that's clearly composited or anything of the sort. But I know how much movie technology has advanced.
Yeah.
In that intervening 14, 15 years that I'm curious how much better they could have done. I did think with some of the fight scenes, there was a lot of quick cuts and kind of moving the camera and stuff like that, which no doubt made it easier to film. And I imagine that for some of the sequences, they had cameras at different angles and they would just cut together to, you know, get the tempo of the action better and whatnot. But they did a really good job selling me on the concept that Jake Gyllenhaal was doing a lot of the running and jumping and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, he had stunt doubles and whatnot. I mean, in the credits, the list of doubles for him and everybody else goes on for a bit.
Yeah.
Because it's a very action-heavy movie.
And, like, they had stunt horse-riding doubles. And, I mean, there's one scene where I had no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know they called in the doubles for that. That's trick horse-riding, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. There were a number of places for that. Again, some of the parkour, some of the other kind of wirework stunts or whatnot. Where he's running up the side of a wall or running along the side of a wall or some of that stuff.
Or diving off of a bell tower, for lack of a better term, into a window.
Yeah, there are some of these things where the jump off the building, hang on to the rope, swing in through the window, your lead actor's not going to do.
Yeah.
Hell, your lead stunt guy is probably not going to do. They're going to fake it all out. But again, when you've got people who know how to put together an action movie, it does really well. And I was, I mean, I knew Jake Gyllenhaal was in it. I think he was terrific as Mysterio in the second Tom Holland Spider-Man film. But I hadn't realized how many other familiar faces were in the film.
I'd agree with that.
Ben Kingsley, I was not the least bit surprised he turned out to be the villain.
He plays that kind of role. That's such a sad comment. I mean, I agree.
He does it beautifully.
Well, and it's funny because there was one point in the film where it just suddenly popped into my head. There was an interview with Patrick Stewart, and they were asking him kind of a, you know, what's one of the most awkward moments you've had since you became famous? And he said, you know, someone came up and asked me for my autograph. And as I take the pen and paper, right, they're like, I just so love your work, Mr. Kingsley.
That's funny. I could see how somebody could confuse them.
Well, but it was just something in one of the scenes. I just suddenly popped to a, but I could see Patrick Stewart doing this.
I don't know, because Ben Kingsley has that air of evilness about him in a lot of the roles he plays that Patrick Stewart does not.
But I think that's why I wanted Patrick Stewart, because I would have been more surprised when the evilness came out.
I think Patrick Stewart could have played the fatherly uncle friend kind of thing a lot better.
Yes.
And also really could have come the, you sniveling little idiot kind of, you ruined this for me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I could...
I mean, Ben Kingsley knocked it out of the park, don't get me wrong, and I love his acting.
Yeah, yeah, but I agree that Patrick Stewart would have brought an interesting dynamic to the role.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would be interesting. But again, Gyllenhaal was in one of the Spider-Man movies, which is part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Ben Kingsley played the fake Mandarin a time or two. So he's part of, obviously, the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina played Doc Ock, who was not only in one of the earlier Spider-Man films, but in the third Tom Holland one. So he's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's fine.
They had quite a few. But one of the other familiar faces was Reese Ritchie from The Ark.
Yes.
And he was well used. It was a small-ish role. I mean, not tiny, but he did it really well. He played the buddy.
Well, not only did he nail the role, but he played it in a way that I was 99% sure I got who the character was. And when we watched the end credits,
yeah,
and the end credits spelled it out for me, I'm like, yes, that's what I thought. I mean, I wish they'd spelled it out better for me in the movie, and that I had correctly, that my assumption.
Well, it just would have taken a line of dialogue if we've known each other since that day in the square.
Mm-hmm.
You got lucky.
Yes.
It's interesting, though, because...
Or you never left me behind.
Yes, that would have been the better way.
After that day in the square.
There's a way they could have walked the line of both giving the hard time and you were loyal.
Yes.
You know, of, I'm not going to let you forget it either, but I appreciate, you know, whatever. What's interesting is here he plays the best friend, the sidekick kind of role. In the arc, he's the less likable character.
Yes.
And then when he guest starred in Almost Paradise, he was the bad guy.
Yeah.
So he's got a lot more range than I think he probably gets credit for.
I would agree with that.
Because I honestly would have assumed from the arc that that was a actor that really hadn't gotten into the North American scene. But, I mean, obviously he had 10, 15 years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, a solid cast, great stunts. The story, I think, held together very well. It was an action-heavy film, but it had a solid plot.
I was going to say, I think the plot is better than people are inclined to give it credit for.
I think it's easy to lose sight of the plot because of all the action.
Well, and I think it's easy to, I'm inclined to say, make fun of the plot. And by that, I mean it starts with a very Aladdin marketplace scene.
Yes. I would love to see the opening of this with the opening of Aladdin, and you might need to do a little editing of the two, but there's the running through the marketplace. The opening song of Aladdin's a thief, essentially.
Yes.
You know, one step in front of the other, whatever. You could almost do that for the opening of this film.
Well, and the difference here is this is an honest kid. He pays for the apple instead of stealing it.
The irony of the moral flip.
Yeah.
But the parallel feel.
Yes, yes. He stands up for another kid whose only crime, really, is running out into a street without looking both ways and nearly getting trampled by the royal guard.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he sees that one of the royal guardsmen is going to beat this kid to a bloody pulp for running without looking, he throws that hard-won apple at the guard's shoulder.
Well, and again, it sets things up well. There was a good voiceover accompanying it to set the stage and make sure we're understanding what we're seeing and such.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an effective way to start the story and then, okay, let's bump up 15 years, age up the characters, and get into the meat and potatoes of this.
How long was the movie?
Just under 2 hours.
I was thinking it was on the longer end of the spectrum. And the reason I say that is I think if it had been a shorter film, they would have felt they had time to give us a montage of those 15 years.
Mm.
And if they had, we would have seen the dynamic between the three brothers build.
And the friend.
Yes.
I.e., where does he fit in?
Yes.
How does... Yeah.
And I think that would have been beneficial.
And it would have taken a few minutes. Well, I think some of it is... I'm curious how long that opening scene was, that opening section, and when that 15-year time jump was.
Yeah.
because I think in some cases we would have not only gotten the montage, it would have been as the credits went.
Yes.
Kind of do a dual purpose sort of a thing of, okay, we've done this, we're starting the story, but we're going to entertain you a little bit more just mm-hmm. to kind of show that we're flipping the pages on the calendar sort of thing.
Well, as we get to with the 15 years later, the, hey, we're in the military together and we're going to attack a city. If we'd had a montage of this is the relationship between the three brothers, the orphan who's been brought in and the two natural sons, then some of what's playing out between the three as they're planning the attack on the city would have made more sense.
Well, and they also could have played up the relationship between the dad and the uncle.
Yes.
And how the uncle was always in the shadow.
Yes.
And I think they set a lot of that up, but it took a little longer. It was a little less obvious.
Mm-hmm. I think they didn't want to play up the father-uncle relationship as brothers because they wanted to surprise us.
Yeah, the problem was the father not being present when it's, hey, we're going to go attack the city and all of that.
Because he was off praying in the east.
It telegraphed a few things as well. And it made the father, though, seem so out of the picture that when he comes in, it seemed a little odd, and he's there long enough to die.
Yes.
I mean, the whole bit with they're going to rewind the clock and the movie will have almost never have happened by the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
A little telegraphed, but kind of was how it needed to be.
Yeah.
Because, and it's funny because even knowing they were likely to do that, which indeed they did, it didn't feel cheap when various characters were getting killed off or otherwise out of the picture.
No, you were grateful you knew that this universe had time travel.
But there are others where you know it has time travel and they overplay their hand and waste the deaths. The fact that, like, the one brother finally believes him but is killed. The other one finally believes him and then is killed. You know what I mean? And those sorts of...
Both of them die as they're about to stand up for him, basically.
Exactly, exactly. That's my point.
Which makes it very much a, and we want them back. And we're rooting for our hero to find the way to save them.
It's just that, for lack of a better term, the execution of the executions was such that it, because there are times where it's like, and of course you're going to kill him there. You know, it feels yes. cheap, it feels bad, it feels perfunctory or something like that.
But if they killed them a scene earlier,
yes.
it would have been a good riddance.
Yeah.
We don't need time travel in this universe, good riddance.
If they were still against
yes.
the lead at that point, yeah. The mechanics of the dagger and some of that stuff could have been a little better. It worked fine, but it felt like he used the dagger initially, accidentally,
mm-hmm.
does it another time or two, figures it out, but he's out of sand.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the first time it holds two or three loads of sand, then after that it seems to hold less and less sand. And it's not just because they have less and less sand at hand.
Well, we were told it holds 1 minute of sand. And he used it, and it may be how long you push the button or something like
okay.
that.
Okay.
Because at first he only moves back about 15 seconds or something.
Okay. I'll give you that one. Okay.
You know, he just kind of accidentally bumps it or
yeah.
something versus holding it down. I don't know. I'm curious if they've made a kind of a replica prop of that.
That'd be awesome.
And it's a shame that while they intended for this to be the start of a new franchise, it didn't pan out to that. Because it's a fun film.
It really is. Yeah.
And a fun film that's well shot with a good cast.
Yeah.
And I think...
And a great energy level.
Yeah, definitely great energy level. I think most of the cast, if you were to do sequels, would have needed to have been in the sequel, but not necessarily heavily featured in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a question of, okay, where do they go? What do they do? And how do you not kind of repeat yourself or whatnot?
Well, the interesting thing is we kind of set it up to where the sequel could be the Prince of Persia finding his life outside of Persia.
I think it would have been him and the princess. We'd have gotten the romance arc kind of again,
mm-hmm.
this time with him knowing more than she does, because
yeah.
he already knows her, and them, like you said, traveling somewhere to go establish diplomatic relations or do some mission or some quest. It almost would have had to have been a quest. The question is, do you add in other objects of power or some such?
Mm.
And part of it for me is, not being that familiar with the video game.
Yeah.
Other than the time traveling dagger sort of a thing, which I'm assuming was in the game, I don't know enough about its plot line or its sequel game to know what is there in the game mythos to kind of pull on. But it looks like the creative guy behind the game was the creative power behind the story here, and then somebody else kind of finalized it into the screenplay.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I think the writing you do for a video game, particularly that style of video game, is similar to doing a movie, but different.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, there's what do the characters do, how do you branch the story, and that kind of a thing. And that's not to be confused with almost modern video game writing, or certainly massively multiplayer online games, where you're interacting with NPCs, there's tons of dialogue, and there are, in some cases, scenes, but not stories, and then there's others that have kind of the overarching season arc for adventures and such that are written out and planned out at one level versus, again, that other level of the interaction with various characters.
Yeah.
And having been in the video game industry and stuff for some time and talked to many people who've been in other aspects of it and stuff, I know that the way they kind of think through the game storyline, because you've got either one or a bazillion players doing their own thing, charting their own course, you're going through that in a very different mindset than somebody, to trivialize it, sitting down with pen and paper and just freehanding a story from start to finish. Which, of course, is not how somebody writes that sort of a story, but to simplify and trivialize it. Because, I mean, again, you've got to think through the story. Does it work? Does it have the motivation? Does it have the payoff? I got something I want to do in Act 3. Did I set up an Act 1 but not telegraph it? And there's an art to that.
Well, and one of the things that I liked about the movie was they did play with the dynamics of family from both the natural family and adopted family angles.
Yeah. Well, what I liked about it is it didn't feel like there were any extraneous characters.
I would agree with that.
And there are a number of stories and movies where this character, sure, they were fun, but why were they there?
Well, and actually one of the characters that when we were first meeting him, I wondered if he would be extraneous was Sesso, the knife thrower.
Mm.
And boy, he paid off six ways from Sunday.
He struck me as the Chewbacca of the story.
Mm-hmm. That's a good way to put it.
Kind of the quiet, loyal follower, kind of the firepower when you need him.
But Han needs Chewbacca.
Yes.
Chewbacca needs Han just as much.
Yeah. Well, Han or Chewbacca without the other is an incomplete thing. Whereas here, the knife thrower got his final action scene to himself, but in a way that's still tied into...
Yeah, Sheik Amar.
The Sheik Amar, which was...
Alfred Molina.
Alfred Molina's character, which he did a great job in that. And it's funny, because some, it's like I recognize them a mile away. Here, it was the voice.
It was. Well, and part of it was the makeup job.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Sesso with that last action scene, and when he does that final action of his in it, and at first I'm like, oh, this is outrageous.
It was definitely over the top of he flings the knife and it lands exactly where he needs it to land.
Well, if the tree hadn't been there, I would not have accepted it, quite frankly. But, I mean, he's a knife thrower. There's a tree there, so I'll give it to him.
Yeah, yeah.
That he hit the tree. But at first, when he's just throwing it out the window, I'm like, and what, it's going to land at the feet of the right person in a crowd?
Yeah.
You know, but because he got it to Sheik Amar to do with the knife what needed to be done, as you say, it tied them back together. But more than that, for me, it was the two of them were a team.
Yes. What I found interesting, though, with that final kind of knife battle he's in, he's actually throwing his knives.
Yes.
The other guy had like a wrist-mounted, spring-loaded kind of a dart gun.
And that was the first time I started questioning what time frame is this.
I was taking it as being back a ways.
Me too.
But when you've got kind of that assassin's guild, for lack of a better term, you figure they've figured out basic mechanisms for
murder.
easy murder.
Yeah.
I did think at times some of their weaponry was a little almost ninja-esque, and I don't say a little modern or whatever. I did love the whole bit when we've got the ostrich racing and all of that stuff and the Valley of Slaves and Death and all that stuff. But the whole thing is, yeah, we're just trying to avoid taxes.
Oh, I loved that the whole thing there was basically marketing. And if we get the word out that this is so dangerous and so horrible, people won't come here.
It was a fun spin on modern public relations, the disenfranchised, the don't want to be taxed and fighting the man or whatever.
Well,
it's like you're making we've made ourselves out to be the bad guys. We've got the window dressing of the skeletons around to scare people off. We just want to be left alone and have fun.
Well, and the proverbial deadly forest in how many fairy tales you name it.
Well, in fantasy realms and whatnot, there's this is the dark, dangerous place.
Yes.
And if it's just got that reputation because they built it up, of just leave us the hell alone. We don't want to put up with, again, in this case, it was taxes and whatnot. And I loved how it's, we have this ostrich race every Tuesday and Friday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was arguably anachronistic, but it fit.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't something we've seen 1,000 times.
It also fit with the fact that Dastan was a prince by title, but he still fit in with the people he grew up with.
Yes. He's from the lower caste. He's not royal by birth.
Yeah.
And he's able to fit in both worlds.
Yes.
Although he seems to be more of a natural fit in the less royal aspect.
Well, and Nizam used that to his advantage when he's trying to make his brother Tuss doubt him with the whole, he's fermenting rebellion, this, that, and the other.
Yeah. But that runs against the opening action sequence in the modern time, i.e. the 15 years later. They're going to attack this city, and the adopted brother has taken his couple of guys, found a way to sneak into the city, open the other gate, flag them, hey, open right here, kind of a thing, and disobeyed orders, but saved a lot of lives.
Exactly. And he did it to save the lives of the men his brothers were leading.
Yeah, yeah. And again, they played all of that fairly well.
And I loved the speech from his father about you did what a good man would do.
A great man, however.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you did well, but you should have done better.
Yeah.
It was kind of an interesting fathering moment.
Yeah.
With that. Yeah, the relationship between the father and the three boys shows up in a number of scenes, sometimes without the father even there, the brothers talking and some of those things. And given the father's, the bond between brothers is so important and stuff, it makes me wonder how much the father knew or even suspected of his brother's treachery. And I'm presuming none at all.
Well, but that's why they said that the father always told the story about when they were hunting his boys. The father genuinely believed his brother saved his life, and that was a great moment for them as brothers, and he had no regrets.
If they did a sequel, we would have to hear that story again, because the father's still around.
Yes.
The uncle, however, isn't. The father's probably, it's like, why isn't the, there's a little animosity there,
I mean, uncle's
there's something there to be had.
Yeah, uncle's alive, but what do you do with uncle? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking he was dead, but you're right. He survived. Well, you have Ben Kingsley come back, so the seeds of rebellion and trying to overthrow the government again.
Yeah.
So, it would have been fun if they could have done a sequel and stuff, but this sort of action adventure movie, we get a number of them every summer.
Yes.
This, I think, was well done and arguably more deserving of a sequel than many other things.
Well, that takes me back to God, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, I just loved the visuals.
Well, and there were a number of times, when we get into the city and people are going up the stairs and stuff, I'm like, okay, how much of this did they build? How much of this is either matte or digital or or what? Because it was seamlessly done and never felt, video gamey, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, some of the Superman film where he's fighting Zod and half of Metropolis gets trashed. That action stuff felt like a video game. Not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways you could do these action sequences that, I mean, you're obviously going to need to put in special effects, camera trickery, stunt doubles, and the like. But you can do it in a way that's very obvious that you've done that.
Yes.
In other ways where it's a lot smoother. Now, would I have liked a little fewer quick cuts in the fight scenes, a little easier to follow? Yeah, sure. But I've almost come to expect that having seen Jackie Chan films, where he and his guys are talented enough and do enough takes to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Your average production company, they're not going to go to those lengths.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was I think it was My Stunts that Jackie Chan did. He's like, you ever wonder how we get that shot of somebody throws something at me, I kick it, and it hits this other guy? Here, let me show you. And they've got the camera set up, the guy throws the one thing, he kicks it, it misses. Take two, take three, take four, take 50, take 60,
yeah.
Until finally, oh, we got it. You know, it's not like they do it perfectly the first time, or even the first dozen. But if you're dedicated enough to put in the time, and you've got it planned out, you know it can be done, it's just you got to do it.
Yeah.
Do it enough times, it happens. You get lucky. So, I didn't feel that they cut corners on any of this stuff. It was clear that they had storyboarded the stuff out to get the rhythm of the scenes down. Mm-hmm. And then it's, okay, how do we cut it together? How do we make the various pieces fit together? Because I've seen other ones where there's action, but there's no through line to it. There's no trajectory to it.
Yeah.
It's just chaos. And this didn't feel that way at all.
Well, and they did some stuff that subtle may not be the right word for it, but like Dastin, we saw how strong he was when he is single-handedly lifting the gate by handling the wheel. And then later when another heavy gate needs to be lifted,
yep,
he can do it single-handedly.
Well, and also when he is going up that wall at the beginning, and the archers are shooting arrows to give him the handholds, and one almost hits him and stuff, and he's quick enough to dodge it.
Yeah.
Between that and when, as a kid, he's running through the marketplace and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the parkour. We've seen the agility. So later, when he's running and arrows are flying in all directions, and he's dodging them.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little unbelievable, but they sell it, and it's like, okay, I'll accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if we had not seen any of that ability,
yeah,
it doesn't play.
Well, and he covers the hooves of his horse to make it hard to track. So later when he tracks someone, we're like, well, you've kind of established he's got some knowledge regarding tracking. Otherwise, he wouldn't have known how to obscure his own tracks.
Well, and that he thinks through things.
Mm-hmm.
He plans ahead.
Yeah.
He's not just going on instinct.
Yes.
That he may seem a little, I don't want to say stupid or anything, but a little
glib.
Certainly glib, but he doesn't come across as the master planner thinker type.
Yeah.
But he is thinking, he is paying attention.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of times we get some reaction shots where it's like he's noticing something, he's thinking about something, he's realizing something.
Yes.
And again, that sets up he's able to put two and two together, because I think there are other takes on this kind of a character where he could have been, frankly, a little dense, a little, hey, I'm lucky to have been adopted. I'm a prince of Persia, and all is coming to me. I don't need to do anything. That kind of a character would have had a harder time realizing, no, it's the uncle that's the bad guy here, not the brothers.
Yeah.
And could have wound up going down a more mistaken path. And I liked how the way the story played out, it wasn't telegraphed. Ben Kingsley's definitely the bad guy, or this brother's against him, this brother's for him, or any of that stuff. It reveals itself appropriately in the story, I guess, mm-hmm. is the way to put it.
Yeah. It unfolds nicely.
Yeah. I think they did a good job not only of writing the story, but then doing that editing pass on the story to make sure it holds water. The information is revealed to us at the right times, and not feeling, oh, where did that come from? Or, yeah, I've known that for a while.
Yeah.
And that's tough to do sometimes.
That is. Now, it does look like there are some animated, maybe, films that are set after this.
Interesting.
That's worth looking into.
That is worth looking into.
Because I'd be curious to see more story with these characters.
Yeah, same here. It was fun. It was interesting. I think with animation, I don't know how well they could pull off the action sequences. It could still be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes, is it, you know, down to, is it like Saturday morning animation or feature film animation kind of thing? Or somewhere in between, more likely.
The image I'm seeing for the cover looks very photorealistic slash computer.
Does it have a date? Because this being a video game property, that gives you the ability to use a video game engine and some of the video game guys to get something that looks very true to the game, I would imagine, and has a good sense of action and believability to it.
Well, they may be listing the video games with the movies. Okay, now I'm confused.
All right, I'll take a look.
Yeah.
Because I know there was a second Prince of Persia video game, but I don't know beyond this movie what else was done with the property. And I know they've done remakes of the video games, because the first video game was like 1989. So, If there's more, it would be fun to watch more, because again, yeah. I enjoyed this. So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.